From the snowy tundra of New Hampshire, it is Josh Nason's Punch Out, live, here, with you. I'm Josh Nason, writer, editor, podcaster for this very website. Hope you guys are all doing well, staying COVID-free. Christmas shopping's good, Kwanzaa shopping, Hanukkah shopping, whatever you do this time of year, or no shopping at all, good for you. Hope you guys are doing well, relaxing, and it is Saturday night as I record this intro. It is dark outside. It is snowing. First snowstorm of the year. We are ready, I hope, prepared. Snowblower going out tomorrow, so hopefully we're good to go there. I'm drinking a beverage, nice adult beverage, IPA. We do a thing every year, a group of friends of mine. We do a kind of like a, it's not like a Secret Santa, but in a way it is. Like, so basically it's a group of us that get together. This group has been doing this for like 20 years. And essentially, we buy alcohol for the other person. Usually, we have a big party, a holiday party. Everyone kind of comes together, exchanges these gifts. So I get, you know, person X. I know there's someone that coordinates this that tells me what type of beverages they like to drink. I get all this stuff. And at the party, I show up and, you know, one person starts and then kind of a chain effect down the row. And that's what kind of what you drink for the night. And obviously in our younger days, we would really, really get after it. It was, you know, sloppy type of parties, a little bit different these years. But yeah, of course, this year we're not having a party, but a couple of us still want to do the tradition anyway, and met up my friend. So I'm drinking a 603. It's the first time I've had this. 603 Hop Obsession is an IPA, as you might imagine, and it's not bad. 5.4 alcohol, so kind of low for my taste. I like the Imperials, Imperial Stouts, Imperial IPAs, that type of thing. Make it hurt. But there's some bourbon downstairs I may have a little bit later on because it's Saturday, right? Saturday, going to kick back, relax, and all that. On this week, got too much to drink already. This week on the show, someone I've wanted to talk to for a long time, Casey Lydon, E. Casey Lydon, if you're proper, from MMAfighting.com. If you don't recognize the name, you have seen his work. If you've seen anything on MMAfighting.com over the last 10 plus years, he is someone that was basically the cameraman for Ariel Helwani for all of his classic interviews, and has been doing some more in front of the camera work in recent months as well, as we talk about on the show. But he's someone that has done a lot. He is married to Esther Lynn, who is a past guest of this very podcast. And we had a great conversation. Someone I've wanted to talk to for a long time. For some reason, it just never really came together for me to ask. Finally, I did, made it happen. And so we talk, you know, it's one of those conversations that initially I'm thinking, maybe 30, 35 minutes. And then all of a sudden, you know, I looked down, it was like 52 minutes because we just kind of kept just talking. So we didn't, you know, go into specific event previews or kind of like recent stuff, but really, you know, what I wanted to talk about was the era of MMA that we're in and whether kind of, you know, as a sport, is it easy for it to attract new fans? And we talk a little bit about that. Is it, you know, with the so many changes in main events, just the amount of shows every single week, is it easy for new fans to get into? So we chat about that, kind of the state that the sport is in a lot of ways, and kind of talk about his background, how he got into it. And it's kind of unique because he did not come into this directly as a fan. He came into this as kind of just an opportunity to do some work and as kind of just launch into this whole career. So we chat a lot about that as well. And even at the end, we talk about like TV shows that we are checking out now that we like. So if you're looking for some new suggestions, there's some stuff at the end of that. So enjoy this conversation. Then after our talk, I'll come back and I have a couple thoughts about Impact Wrestling and this whole deal with AEW, which we don't know a lot about yet, as well as Yoel Romero being gone from the UFC, just like that. So enjoy this conversation with myself and Casey Lydon. I think you're really going to like it. And then I'll talk to you after the break after that or something. I don't know. I'm going to have a drink. Casey Lydon, let's go. So back in May 2016, I created a Google Doc of past and hopeful guests for this very podcast. And my guest this week was actually one of the names on there. And it just only took me, what, 4+ years to get him on the show? I'm really terrible at this, everyone. He is a longtime familiar name behind the camera at MMAfighting.com. But now he's more in front of the camera as he hosts a ton of video shows and a bunch of other cool stuff for MMAfighting.com. He is the video director there and so much more. E. Casey Lydon. is back in the house and or here for the first time, rather. And Casey, we'll start off with a really, really tough stuff, really tough questions. We always do when we have someone that has attended wrestling and MMA events with Dave Meltzer, who obviously is a major part of this very website. Any good Dave stories?
My favorite Dave story, I guess, is it was at, I think, Bola, maybe a couple years ago. It was on Bola, and Ricochet was wrestling at Bola, PWG. And this is at in Reseda, and Esther Lynn, my wife, she was taking photos for them. And there, you know, there's this big slam. I think it was a thumbtack match, and Ricochet slams in these thumbtacks. You know, he's jumping around, writhing in pain. And Esther takes this photo, and I'm actually in the background. I'm with Mark Ormondi back there. I think Dave Doyle is there too, mm-hmm. some other MMA journalist. And we're all like, whoa, screaming. But there's Dave Meltzer in the front row while everyone else is screaming. He's sitting there just looking at his notepad, just writing things down, like with no expression, just writing it down. So this photo is actually on our TV. It goes into save mode, screensaver mode, like every 15 minutes, and it rotates through Esther's photos. So about once every 50 photos, we see Dave Meltzer and Ricochet, just Ricochet writhing in pain, us screaming in the background, and Dave Meltzer just sitting there. So I just think of Dave that way, just front row at every PWG.
He has seen a lot of weird stuff. Because anyone that's ever watched wrestling has, but he's seen more of it and becomes like almost like desensitized to it. See, I think I've actually seen that picture you've shared before, or Esther has, or something like that. But it is a, I've heard these stories about Dave at wrestling shows. We talked to Dave Doyle here and Esther and a bunch of other people. And I'm always interested to get those stories and hear, like, you know, as he kind of walks around all these people that just kind of like flock to him or answering questions or all that stuff. It's a weird thing. He is he's a completely unique character. There will never be anyone else like him in so many ways. And it's just that by some, you know, there's a lot of people obviously that don't like what he says on the internet, but there's a lot of people that do. And to hear those stories, it's quite something. Hopefully one day, once we're all through this, I get a chance to see it live in person.
I love Dave. I love talking to Dave before the wrestling show. And then afterwards, like, what'd you think? And I've been fortunate enough to go to Tokyo last few years and see Wrestle Kingdom, and then we make sure we run to Dave and at least spend some time talking to him about it, you know, after the show and everything. So it's always great getting his insight.
I forgot about that you guys went to Japan, because Esther really started getting into shooting pro wrestling, but I believe, as you mentioned, Lutu, and I think actually when she was on here a couple of years ago, we had actually talked about it. And then you guys have been to Wrestle Kingdom a couple of times. I think Ramondi went with you as well, right?
I've been to three Wrestle Kingdoms now, and he's been to, I think he went to two of those.
Gotcha.
And actually I was just talking to Mark yesterday, and we were all just kind of, you know, having a pity party, mm-hmm. because like our Japan trip is totally, you know, gone this year, of course, because of the pandemic. And actually we were after Wrestle Kingdom last year. So, you know, early January when it was done, Wrestle Kingdom's like January 4th, I think. So like the very next day, we're like, you know what? Next year, let's skip Wrestle Kingdom, but instead come in around, I think it was October, and we'll come for the G1. You know, we're like, yeah, let's do that. Yeah. And we're all like hyped, and we're all like, all right, how much money we got to save? But, you know, and then like probably about May or so, we were like, I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah.
So yesterday we were just like, oh, okay, well, 2021, guys, here we go. Let's do this.
I know. God, with everything seems to be, you know, wait till next year. Have you always been a wrestling fan? Did you just kind of start getting into it, like some of the New Japan stuff, or tell me a little bit about that.
It was really New Japan, to be honest. Much like MMA, I'm a rarity in a sense. I got into MMA because of my camera skills and my videography skills, my editing skills. I worked on documentaries and reality TV before MMA, and it was literally just a job. I got hired to do some, you know, promo stuff for some like Strikeforce and Showtime back in the day, and it was literally just human cockfighting to me. It was like those VHS tapes you see in the back of Blockbuster.
Yeah,
that's what MMA was to me, even as I was working in it for the first like 6 months or so. And it wasn't until I started meeting people who worked in the sport, like coaches and things like that, where I started understanding the sport. But it really wasn't until, because I missed it. I came in the very, right when Pride was ending and Dream in Japan was starting. And I think, excuse me, Dream was coming on HDNet at the time. And it wasn't until I started watching those shows, Dream on HDNet, I was like, whoa, this is MMA. I don't know. The aesthetics that they do, they had it over there, just really attracted me to the sport, to MMA. But I knew nothing about wrestling. I mean, I was Hulk Hogan, you know, all that Ultimate Warrior stuff as a kid. I'm in my early 40s now. But like I missed, like, sorry, but like, as you know, high school came around, college, I just kind of fell out of wrestling. I just didn't know anything about it. Yeah. So I had never heard of New Japan, to be honest. And basically Mark Ormonde just kind of, I don't remember the exact moment, he just kind of introduced me to New Japan. And I just really enjoyed the way the show looked. I was like, whoa, this is pro wrestling. This is the same thing we see over here, but it's so different. And from that, I found out about PWG, and he was like, you want to go? And we got, and then Excalibur, you know, who kind of, I don't know if he runs PWG, but, he knew Investor Lin, and he's just basically, yeah, if you guys want to, you know, take photos of our shows, cool. And then I went down to Reseda and saw a PWG show, and it just blew my mind. I was like, I didn't know this was what wrestling was. I don't know, because I've only seen like WrestleManias. That's what wrestling was to me. But like, it was just so much more intimate. It was just like, I loved the positivity of the crowd there. It was just, it was such a different energy and such a nice change of pace from my, you know, 9 to 5 working in MMA, which is obviously just, it's so similar, but so different.
Yeah. It's intoxicating, especially when you get those, those small environments where it's like, you know, 400 or 500 people, something like that. And everyone's kind of packed in, but you're just kind of watching this thing that, you know, for people on the outside, you can't really explain it. You know, Jordan Breen, I got to dig up this clip. He came on my show years ago, and he perfectly articulated what pro wrestling is. And it's so hard to explain to people from the outside. So then you get in this environment where it's like, well, all these people are packed in watching this whole thing. And once you kind of separate yourself and divorce yourself from that and just let it kind of just take over, it's really intoxicating. And PWG, obviously, it really kind of rebirthed in a lot of ways this love of indie wrestling for so many people. And it's like, oh, this is what it can be. And then, you know, the scarcity of the tapes and trying to find the footage. It's only available on DVD. Still, all these events aren't streaming and all this stuff. It's very anti the technology era that we're in, if that makes sense. And that's really interesting. So have you watched it? So Excalibur obviously is involved with AEW. Have you watched any of that stuff?
I watched AEW and I enjoy it. You know, I'm happy for all the wrestlers there making a living and, you know, hopefully have a little bit of financial security, because I, you know, I'm an adult. I know, I understand people have bills to pay. So I sympathize with all that kind of stuff. So, I enjoyed AEW. I enjoy it more than WWE, but it's still not like going to a show live, and it's still not New Japan or Japanese style pro wrestling.
Yep. So yeah, it's been a kind of interesting year in a lot of ways, both the sport and media outlets that cover it. And obviously, you know, there's been layoffs and changes and people going here, people going there. Obviously the sport itself, took an absence, much to Dana White's chagrin, earlier in the year, and Bellator's back and all that stuff. Obviously, you know, your website's undergone a ton of changes with people leaving, new people joining, more people stepping up. And you've been, Esther obviously leaving the game, in terms of, taking pictures of different events and all that, and been a constant doing some different stuff now. I mean, it's been a really interesting year, but yet you have still remained at MMA Fighting, one of the people that's been there for forever and with familiar faces. And now you're doing more video podcasts and, more of a face with a beautiful mustache and that many people are jealous of. How did that kind of be? Just simply opportunity or need, or how'd that work out?
really just need, to be honest. Like, of course, you know, when the pandemic hit, it just, and there was just no sports, there was no live events for all sports. And then MMA probably took like, a good 2 month hiatus. And even when it came back, I mean, just from a, you know, the money standpoint, the advertising money wasn't there. So what happened was, even though there were still shows going on, we just, our salespeople for our parent company just couldn't generate enough revenue. So we just started losing people. So essentially we lost a lot of on-camera talent, you know? So like people like P.T. Carroll, who I love. And so what happened was just, I was just like, oh man, you know, I want to keep my job. I want to stay employed. So I was like, all right, I guess we're turning the camera on me. Cause I know I was kind of notorious for like, if you don't know my past, like I worked with Eric Helwani for like a decade before he went to ESPN. So it was kind of like a joke when like they would shoot like a preview show or an interview. And afterwards I would go, you know what? That was pretty good. That was pretty good. It's like, I would have asked this. You didn't ask that, but that was a good question. Or I kind of like, and then like Ariel or Mark or Sean Alshadi, but like, oh, Casey didn't roll his eyes. So I guess it was a good interview. Or like, I was like, oh, I wasn't bored at all, guys. So good job. You know, so I was kind of like this kind of unofficial critic of everything.
Yeah.
So it was like, I figured, you know, it's like, I've been watching this sport so dang long. And it's not like I wanted to be in front of the camera, but I was like, well, crap, man, we gotta put stuff out there. And since I can't travel and go to these camps and go to all these fight weeks, or, you know, just travel and just like normally I would go to Abu Dhabi, I'll be in Tokyo shooting a show MMA, or, you know, be in Ireland or in New York, but I just go to Vegas if that. And I just kind of had to make myself relevant, you know, for the company and just in MMA in general, because what I did just what didn't exist anymore. So, yeah, I just started blabbing, and here I am.
now you're a talking head. You're the it's incredible how that stuff happens. You know,
but you know, what kind of gave me the bit of a confidence boost to do it was actually Wei.
Yeah.
Post
wrestling,
Wei. Because he was originally I know Wei. He was a camera. He when I met Wei a decade ago, he was the camera guy for Mauro Ranallo when Mauro Ranallo used to work for The Score. Mm. And that's how I met Wei, way back then. And then I was like, oh, hey, Wei's talking. People are listening to Wei. And then Wei was kind of talking to me, like, no, okay, see, you got your opinion is as valuable as anyone else's in this sport. So I was like, all right.
Yeah. When I first heard Wei, I remember I was listening to I used to listen to live audio wrestling quite a bit, which was John Pollock, Jason Agnew, Dan Lavransky, and then Wei did some production work, and sometimes he would be on and talk. And then I heard an interview, or I heard a podcast that John did with Wei. This was years ago. I was on a plane. I'll never forget this. I was kind of listening to it, and maybe the best of the end of year episode or something. And Wei starts talking. I'm like, who is this guy? He seems so monotone and kind of just boring. And like, and I'm just like, John has this. And like, what is going on here? And then as you kind of get to learn the personality and you get to hear him and John, it was just a absolutely perfect pairing. Those guys are great. You he just really grows on you. You kind of learn like, oh, this is who he is. And this is who this person is. And it just becomes part of like, this is Wei. This is why we like him. Yeah. And that's a good call. I remember, years ago, I think I brought this story up before, myself, Esther, John, Wei, and it might be a couple other people went to a dumpling place in Montreal when GSP was fighting Nick Diaz. And we all went out for dinner one night. I do remember that. Mm-hmm. This is my first time I'd actually met a lot of you. And you guys were very, very nice. Very nice. Not that I expected anything different, but you know, sometimes you know people through Twitter or just through what you hear, what you see on TV and all that. You don't really know the people behind it. And, you know, sometimes you meet people and you're kind of like, they aren't what they seem or whatever. But you guys were, you and Esther and everyone was just really genuine and nice. That always, when I was kind of prepping for tonight, I was just like, I wanted to mention that because you are who you are and you were very nice. So I appreciate that all these years later.
I appreciate that. Yeah, I mean, I guess a bit of my golden rule in the sense of anything I say on camera, anything I tweet, I never tweet or say anything I would never say to that guy's to that guy or woman's face. If I say a fighter is mediocre, I'm prepared to say it to their face. You know, so in a sense, what you see is what you get. What I write is what you get. What you hear is what you get. This isn't. Yeah, I can't fake it. I'm not that good.
Yeah. One thing that I've noticed about you, especially with Invicta and stuff, you ride for Invicta, you know, like you talk a lot about them when they have their events. I remember you talk a lot about them. You have friendships with a lot of these different fighters throughout the years. And it's always very, just very honest and very open, but also very positive. And I don't think we have a lot of that in coverage of the sport, because everyone takes everything so seriously, and every fight has to be so life or death, literally, when in the reality it's not, you know. For obviously the fighters' livelihoods they are, but in terms of the media covering, whatever, it's, you know, it's a little bit different. But I thought, yeah, I know you've always been it's interesting because you have friendship with a lot of fighters, but you're also expected in some respects, obviously, to cover them and be neutral in some ways, but in other ways you can't. And I thought you've kind of danced that line, so to speak, pretty well through the years.
I appreciate it. I understand what you're saying, because it is weird, because if you notice online, I never really say I want this fighter to win, because I really don't want a certain fighter to win most times. I just... Because I'm an adult. I understand everyone's working hard. Everyone's trying to hustle. Everyone's trying to make it. And like, as much as I want fighter A to win, I know fighter B is just, he's just a dude too. I just may not know him, you know? And, that's what I mean. It's just, the sport's tough. Like, the MMA is just a tough business for these fighters. And the longer I work in it, the more I go, man, I don't know why fighters do this, to be honest.
Yeah.
No, it's just the shit they get from fans, the shit they can get from promoters, the shit they can get from media. It's tough. It's a tough life. And that's why I just try not to be too cruel.
Yeah.
There's enough cruelty in the sport.
That's very true, especially with, you know, the fans themselves. And you hit it on the head there. One of the things that I was thinking about a lot this week, as UFC had another main event canceled. I think it was seven main events in the span of a month, from like November, I think it was like November 6th through when the Chimaev and Edwards fight get canceled this weekend. And I was just thinking, like, it's so hard because I've been watching this sport since, what, 2005. I came in through The Ultimate Fighter. That was kind of my gateway drug in. And I was just thinking, like, I don't know how the UFC or the sport itself generates new fans now. Like, I know that obviously there's people that were always, they've heard of like a Conor McGregor, they've heard of a Conor McGregor. So when he fights, obviously there's going to be more interest there. Or, you know, if ESPN does a good job, they'll get into a John Jones fight, or kind of at this point, it's like whatever ESPN really wants to push, you have a chance to maybe hook some people in. But in terms of like the fact that like there's a card every single weekend, and like, we're just kind of used to the fact that there's all these prelim fights, and a show from beginning to end can take 6 hours if we're lucky. And, you know, main events, especially with those in the East Coast, may not start till 12:30, 1 in the morning. And I'm just thinking, like, I don't know, and especially with all these main event changes. And like, if you're on the outside looking in, like, how do you get into the sport if you're a casual, like a sports fan now? Is it just like, if you're like, why do we even bother? Do you happen to happen, like, luckily stumble into it? I was just thinking a lot about that this week with like, and I don't know how many like casual sports fans or non-MMA fans you have in life. I'm sure you have some, but like, how do they, is this sport like, can you still get into it now or what? I don't know.
I don't know the answer to that. I think of a variation of that question a lot too. Because I toss out the question, you know, in the Reebok era of UFC, I can only think of one star that has come out of the Reebok era, and that is Israel Adesanya. I think he's the only actual legitimate star that has come out of the Reebok era. But think of all the big stars in the UFC; they were all pre-Reebok guys. Conor McGregor, Ronda's, you know, whatever. Well, Ronda's not around anymore, but Brock's not around anymore. John Jones is barely around now. I mean, we have big fighters. We have Peter Yans, we have Shevchenko's, who are very good. I mean, who are obviously great fighters, but they're not like crossover stars.
Yeah.
And I think Izzy actually is a crossover star. Oh, excuse me. When they go off again. he actually is a crossover star, but I wonder, like, with the Reebok era, with these basically where fights are now content rather than, I guess, meaningful. I really think of these fight nights just as content. I don't know the answer to that. Even people who work in the industry, I mean, people who are paid to watch fights, like, I looked at this weekend's card. I'm like, oh, that person's fighting. Oh, I don't have no idea who these three fights are. I mean, these people in these three fights have no idea who they are. And it's just hard. I don't know. I feel like covering the UFC 10 years ago, 5 years ago, you watched every fight. You knew the storyline. You knew the storyline pretty much 9 out of 10 fights. Maybe there was one fight that was just kind of there. But, you know, 8 out of 10 fights, there was interest in. No, it's just different. I mean, I don't want to say it's better or worse. It's just different. And I think we in the media, me, just have to kind of accept it.
Yeah.
You came in through tough. I came in different ways, but no, everyone kind of has their entry point, you know, Conor McGregor or Ronda or, you know, Brock or whatever. But once tough leaves, once Conor leaves, once Brock leaves, then you're just kind of like, okay, do I stay around? And I don't know. I often ask myself, if I wasn't an MMA journalist, would I watch this sport? Even though I actually train MMA almost every day, but do I care about it? And as far as like entertainment value, I don't know.
It's interesting you said that, because in my notes before this, kind of playing off that last point, I put like a personal crisis with the sport. And that's kind of this. And this is what I've been kind of going through this year. It's kind of a therapy session, Casey. This is good. This is good for me. Because I used to be like, you know, would watch the main card at least. And then usually the day after, I would then go through and watch all the prelim fights and what have you. And sometimes, you know, the early, like the first couple of fights, this is when like, it was like three different platforms to watch it on. Right. So sometimes I'd watch like whatever's easier to get in my DVR, and then would watch a main card and what have you. But now I find myself like, it's tough for me sometimes to, if I don't happen to catch the main and co-main, it's tough for me to get the motivation to watch some of the prelim fights. If I don't, for some of the points you're mentioning, there's that some of these guys I don't know, and I don't really care about. Like it's because there's just so much of it. And that's the thing, like, it's been this age old question of, you know, how much is too much, and the oversaturation of the sport, and there's just so much. And it goes back to a point you hit on a minute ago, which is, and this is something Dana White said a while ago, is that the UFC sees itself as a content company. And it's gross to say. But this is what all sports think of themselves. Think of content companies first and what they are second. And it's not necessary for the quality. It's all quantity, because you have to fill hours and you have to do this and you have to do this. And there are some cool things that can come out of it. There's with any, you know, with any content company, there's cool documentaries that could come out depending on the story it's being told, certain ways that fights can be presented and so on. But just there's so many guys and girls that fight that just it's almost like they're just kind of taking up time, and it just they're past to get to the point that we really have to care about them is so long, because we also don't have a chance to learn about them, as you mentioned before. You know, back a couple of years ago, even obviously long before that, it was fun to be like, okay, there's one event coming up this month, or maybe there's two. But however, if you go up and down the stack, you kind of know, okay, yeah, I saw this guy or girl fight 3 months ago. I remember they're on this path and they look good here. And you could remember stuff. Now it's like, unless you're the hardest of the hardcore, how do you keep track of, you know, 13 fights, 26 fighters on a show every single Saturday. And then if you add in Bellator on top of that, it's like it's hard to like keep track of it. I don't like, I know friends of mine that have kind of fallen off the sport because there's like, it's too hard to follow. Cause they're used to following more traditional sports where it's, you know, it's, there's games and there's sequences and all this stuff. This is like a never ending ride. And when the good fights come and they stand out and the fun fights come and they stand out, we obviously have those. That's what makes me take notice. But I wonder, like, with all these fights, they just don't seem to matter. And kind of my desire to watch them has definitely died off a lot this year too.
Yeah, I agree. It's like, I'm happy there are fights. I'm happy there's enough content out there that I can cover as an MMA journalist. I'm happy fighters are making living. Certain fighters are making livings, but yeah, like, even with how the UFC handles title shots, which essentially for, like, you know, if this is a stick and ball sport, this is like, that's the title shots are basically the playoff system, I guess, you know, or just a championship game, but there's no real playoffs. So like, that's why I'm really pro. I'm very happy about Bellator's tournaments they do. Mm-hmm. But in the UFC, like, there really are no number one contender fights. Everything is just a fight. If the guys are top 10 ranked, yeah, whoever wins could get a title shot, but whoever wins this would definitely be fighting, Jan or Peter Janjek or something like that. It's because everything, I mean, I don't want to get too, like, everything's about money, but, like, I got kind of disenfranchised with the sport when you just learn, oh, no matter how good this guy is, he won't get a title shot because he just doesn't move that needle as much. And if Greg Hardy can just knock out two dudes, he'll get a title shot because, well, people hate Greg Hardy, so they'll click, and every click counts, you know? Mm-hmm. So I don't know. It's like, I like prize fighting. I like the storylines, but since sometimes I just want a tournament. I just want whoever wins, they go, you know? I don't know. This sport is an emotional roller coaster.
It certainly is. We'll go through.
And then we just have the whole pandemic thing. And then, like, you know, is it even right for these? I mean, like, all these fighters are falling out for COVID and, like, oh man, that means like their families potentially getting sick. Their coaches are getting sick. And it's like, this just feels dirty, you know? So you have another layer on that too.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't get it, because you've heard a lot of talk with all these main events falling out about if it was possible for them to do some sort of bubble. I don't see how it is. I mean, you could do it. I've heard that, you know, you could do it in Abu Dhabi potentially, but they would have to cover, UFC would have to cover the costs of everything to ensure that basically that, you know, the fighters aren't having to. Basically, the fighters aren't having to cover this. And obviously, the UFC can certainly cover this. They've had, despite all this, it's amazing. This ESPN deal is just like, it. Every year it becomes more evident, like, how important that was to them, because they don't have to, between this pandemic and this year, where they said that they've had their most successful year to date because they're saving all these production costs. And obviously, there was some investment in Abu Dhabi, depending on how much they actually spent versus how much was actually spent by the government. That's another story. But when Brock Lesnar was talking about coming back and there was all this buzz, I think, this year has messed my brain up. I think it might have been earlier this year, or may have been last year. Oh, sorry. When they were talking about the Daniel Cormier fight and there were some rumors out there, actually Dave may report this, that essentially Brock wanted a $15 million flat fee. And the UFC or Dana was just like, no, we're not doing that. And they just kind of moved on from it. And Dana White denied that. But still, like, this is the thing that I don't really understand is, if you're, to me, like, if you're ESPN, you want to get Brock Lesnar to fight anyone on pay-per-view because you know you're going to make money off it because you're already guaranteed to pay UFC a certain amount per month. So why aren't you pushing for that when they didn't? And who knows if they did or not? Obviously, they didn't win if they did push for it. But some of these guys that you hear about, and it's just like, the UFC is not really that interested in making kind of like fun fights. Like, we should have seen Khabib versus GSP at some point. Like, we shouldn't have to like guess about it because it fits outside their structure of control over fighters. They don't really want to do that. But you know, if I'm ESPN, I'm like, my God, this thing could sell 2 million pay-per-view buys. We would make a ton of money. Everyone would make a ton of money. Let's go for it. And they're not doing it. So it's like the sport is just in a really weird spot where, and kind of going back to the whole bubble thing, UFC can obviously pay for this. I don't see, I don't see UFC really moving forward that. I think they're just kind of like, we're just going to keep putting on shows and we'll put on whoever in the main event, because it really doesn't matter to us as long as, you know, we have a couple big tentpole fights along the way. But I mean, if anything, this past month has showed us there's kind of like, they'll kind of throw up their hands and be like, whatever, we'll put Marvin Vettori in a main event. Who cares, right?
Yeah, who cares? I mean, like, that's, who cares? That's, we've just gotten used to it as fans, as media. Like, all right, well, like, fights are happening. I guess that's a good thing. And ESPN is getting their content. Mm-hmm. UFC is making their contractual obligations, fulfilling their contractual obligations to ESPN. We get a fight. We don't get necessarily a fight that we wanted to see or a fight that we were anticipating. But like I said, this is the new world. You know, this is like, okay, I guess you just don't get excited for a fight till like 2 days before. I remember getting excited for like for fights for like 3 months. Like, oh, 3 months away. I can't wait. Can't wait. Mm-hmm. But now I'm like 3 months away. That might as well be like three centuries away. If it's 3 days away, all right, we can start talking.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, so
until we get through this COVID thing, I still think we got another six to nine months.
Mm-hmm.
With this in the sport, and I don't know, I don't know how, what's gonna be on the other side. Are we gonna? I have no idea. I just don't know. Yeah. I don't think anyone really knows.
Yeah, it's a big it's a huge question mark, and in a lot of ways, it's kind of like my mindset's like, with life in general, it's like by June, I'm hoping that everyone will be kind of, or at least everyone like in my circle will be vaccinated and as good as we can be. And then we'll kind of see where we get there. It's crazy that this started like in March and we're almost at Christmas. And it's like, we're in wave two or three, depending where you live and everything. And we're just kind of just, you know, making our way through it. And at least there's a little bit of optimism, even though it's going to be absolute pure hell to get there with what's going on and got to stay positive and all that.
Can I share a couple of little COVID stories in MMA?
Of course. Yeah. Hit me. Yeah.
So, December 30th or so, 2019, I was in Tokyo, Japan. Me and Esther were there for the end of the year Ryzen and Bellator shows. Mm. So which happens on December 31st. We're sitting in a hotel room. The news is on. It's Japanese news, so we don't understand what they're saying. But they're talking about some virus in China, all over the news in Japan. This virus in China. And me and Esther are talking like, hey, should we get some ramen? Should we get some soba next? You know, let's go for some sushi. And we're just talking about our food plans. But in the background is all this virus stuff on TV. I'm looking at the TV. I'm going, hey, Esther, this feels like one of those disaster movies where like people are planning their wedding, but in the background, he's like, right, it's in Argentina. That's what it felt like on the TV. Like this, like, it was like, I was looking, I was like, this is going to be very big soon, you know? So, so I first heard about Corona late December in Japan. And then I remember, and by that point, you know, people started hearing about the world. America wasn't taking it seriously. So at UFC 248, which was the last UFC pay-per-view with fans, I think it was, Adesanya versus Romero. The media day was at the UFC Apex, where all the fights are now.
Yep.
And I went to the UFC PR people, very nice and everything, and I told them, hey guys, you know Khabib versus Ferguson ain't happening in New York. It's gonna be happening in that arena right there. And they were like, what are you talking about? I was like, dude, this virus is gonna shut everything down. And they're like, no. I'm like, trust me. Like, I bet Khabib versus Ferguson will be in this arena. And I was being way optimistic too at that point too. But like, man, Casey's such a Debbie Downer. Yeah, I remember actually telling the UFC PR for the first time going, hey, you know, guys, this is like a real thing. Like, things are getting shut down across the world.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it seemed to take the leadership there a long time to kind of figure that out. And you know, it was funny. I started watching the UFC, the Fight Island documentary on ESPN. I started watching. I made it through about 7 minutes, maybe. Because it completely skipped over the fact that they tried to run at Tachi Palace, I'm like, okay, I'm good. Like it didn't even mention it. And it's like, all right, I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm good. Yeah. What a time. God. What are you going to remember fights wise about this year? Any fights as you kind of think back, like fights or storylines? Obviously you mentioned Israel Adesanya before. Any like names or moments or anything like that you remember on the positive side from the sport this year?
I think I'm just going to remember more than anything. I'm remembering no fans. Just like we're going to have this moment in history where like there was just no fans. And I remember just being able to listen to fights with limited commentary and just hearing the breathing and every punch, because that's how I want to see fights. I mean, as much as I get fans are necessary and everything, but like going back to what we were talking about Invicta earlier, one of the reasons I loved Invicta because I was at probably the first, 12 shows I was at cage side. You know, Invicta, they can never draw a big crowd. They'll get maybe 250, 300 people there. Maybe if Cyborg's on the card, maybe like 500, 600 people. Mm. But for the most part, a couple hundred people are in there. So it's never like super loud. So I'm by the cage with my camera, and I'm just hearing all the punches, the grunting, the breathing, the wheezing, the people getting choked out. You know, you hear it all. And I'm like, and to me, I was like, man, I wish fans could experience a fight like this. This is like the way to see the way to experience a fight. And I feel like, oh, with a lot of these fights with no fans, especially if they shoot it up close and the commentators aren't just overbearing, it feels like that. So I think when all this is done, I'm gonna have an appreciation. I'm gonna miss that. And when we do have fans again, it's gonna be weird. Because now it's not even a question. I mean, the first few weeks were like, what's it like fighting about fans? What's it like fighting about fans? And now pretty soon, in about 6 months, you'll be like, so was it weird when you got booed, when you got kicked in the groin?
Yeah, it's a great point. I honestly, and I know, was it Greg Rosenstein who used to work for ESPN? I think he works for the Athletic.
Athletic, yeah.
Yeah, and I remember he sent out a tweet like last month, basically like, saying that, MMA is better with fans. And I know Luke was kind of like, it's not. And it kind of made me think, because I hadn't really thought of it that much. But I kind of do like it hearing the actual fight itself. And now that we're kind of used to it, it's like, it's interesting because you hear the heavy breathing and all that. And for people who don't follow the sport, they're kind of like, that's very weird. But that's just, the impact of the punches and it's it's a different look in. And I wonder.
And no booing. Booing.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be really weird, because I think the fight, I think, would be completely different if the crowd was there. Would have been Kamaru Usman versus Jorge Masvidal. Imagine if that was in the States, 20,000 people, with 95% of those rooting for Jorge Masvidal. And while he's just being stuck against the fence and Usman just stomping on his feet, there would have been 20,000 people who just paid $300 a ticket, just booing their heads off.
Right.
But yet when we saw it, it was just like a normal fight. Mm-hmm. This is how it is. And I just can't. The experience is just completely different. That's all. I think it's so. That's. I think we're just gonna have to. Sorry, I interrupted you, but
no.
That's why. I remember that fight in particular. I was like, man, this fight would be so different with an entire arena just booing them.
Yeah.
And it was a bad, boring fight. And not that they should be rightfully booed, but there's no doubt the crowd will be booing. So I don't know. I don't know what fighters. All these fighters say, oh, I fight better without a crowd. I don't care. I mean, some fighters have to fight better. Some fighters have to fight worse without a crowd. So I'm just very, we just had a special moment in history, because a lot of heartache this happened because a lot of people died. But I think that's my big takeaway from all of this.
Yeah. It's interesting. Yeah. Cause conversely, I think of fights like Poirier and Hooker. That was so, so good. And he's some of these just really like really fun fights. And it would be interesting to put them in front of a crowd, because obviously people are going crazy, but does that take away the impact a little bit? Cause you don't get to hear it. It's just a different environment. Yeah. I'm kind of fascinated to see how that turns out. And it's interesting that, UFC, it's, I don't know if I'm trying to read in the tea leaves too much, but like they could run in Australia or New Zealand right now because essentially the COVID's like non-existent there. Mm-hmm. And they've had rugby matches, I guess, and soccer matches. They had tens of thousands of people like normal in the stands, and they could easily run there. But for some reason, they're not doing it, which is interesting because, you know, they talked about the gates and all this stuff. And, you know, pay-per-view wise, it would still fit in the perfect time frame here. It would not be like in the middle of the early morning hours there or anything like that. The other thing I'm kind of fascinated in as this year's gone on and kind of thinking ahead towards next year is I think they're going to be really reluctant to leave the Apex, and because they have everything there, and especially depending on production cost and travel. And I mean, ESPN is still making cutbacks, so a lot of, you know, live event production, things like that. So everyone's kind of looking at what does the new world look like when this is all done. I wonder if they're going to do as many events on the road as they used to, or if they're going to try to save some costs, especially when this hotel gets built, and they're going to be like, screw it, we're just going to have as much as we can here, because why would I go to, I think of the one of the smallest shows I went to, Bangor, Maine, a couple of years ago that Dana White did as a vanity project. You know, those type of things are just some of these cities that they go to just because they need somewhere to go. It's like, look, we can save a couple million easy in production costs and not seeing anyone there and keeping everyone here in Vegas. I wonder if that's going to become more of a reality next year and the years ahead.
Yeah, I just don't know. Yeah. I don't know. even for myself, I mean, I spent of the 12 months, I would spend, let's just call it 7-8 months on the road, easily of the 12 months. This year, you know, I've driven to Vegas twice. That's it.
That's
for like a couple of events. I used to live at hotel. I mean, live in hotels, live at airports. It's just my world is different now. I don't know. Like, I'm almost like, once we come out of this, like I said, like it's gonna be weird hearing fans. It's gonna be weird traveling again. I don't know. Like I accepted this as my new reality, and now I have to shift back eventually.
Yeah. Are you looking forward to getting back on the road? Are you not really sure how it's going to be when you get out there? Like, if you're going to like it as much, I guess, going on the road.
No, honestly, I'm not looking forward to it.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to maybe traveling to like international cities, you know, things like that. But as far as like, you know, UFC in Cincinnati, you know, which I haven't traveled to Cincinnati in years for like, but things like that. It's just, yeah, I don't know. Everything, just the world's crazy.
Yeah, say the least. I want to wrap up.
We just got to get through this winter. Let's just get through the winter and see what happens on the other end.
I know. I want to ask you, before we go, I want to ask you about, I saw you were asking about The Undoing on HBO. And I assume, do you watch like a lot of TV documentaries and things like that?
I'm looking for a new show to watch. That's what it was. So I was curious if people liked it or not.
Got it. Good. So I just finished it. No spoilers. I won't give any spoilers. I watch a ton of TV. Usually watch like probably a couple hours a night of just different stuff. And these series now are so short that you can get through them in like a week. I like The Undoing a lot. It's just kind of like this whodunit. It's based in New York. It's shot really well, I think, really kind of just it's a beautifully shot show, as I guess TV critics would say. Yeah. It's well acted. Hugh Grant is really good. I haven't seen that many things with Hugh Grant over the years, yeah, to be honest. But he's really good in it. Nicole Kidman's good. It's one of those, it's six episodes, like, you know, 55 minutes each. And it's one of those ones that even till the end, you're kind of like, you don't really know where it's going to go. I remember kind of telling my wife, like, I think this theory, I think this is going to be in the next episode. I'm like, I think one of those might work. And then I was like, okay, this wasn't it. And so it's kind of, if you kind of like those suspenseful shows like that, I would definitely recommend it.
Awesome. I'll check it out.
Yeah. So do you have like all the platforms? So you have like Apple Plus and Netflix and everything like that. What do you got?
My go-tos are HBO Max, Hulu, Amazon Prime Video, whatever, and Netflix.
Got it. Interesting. Okay. Let's see what else. I'm trying to think. Like some of the stuff we watched recently, like on Showtime, for example, I just finished this. They had a Comedy Store documentary series, which was really good. Like if you're
the actual Comedy Store.
One of the guys that was a comic there early on, I think during the 80s, and he was also a filmmaker, Mike something. I'm completely blanking on his name, but he's done some acting and all this stuff. He wanted to do a documentary series on the Comedy Store because it's been through all these different periods of the rise, and then obviously they went through this really dark period. And it is five episodes, I think. It's one of the best things I've seen all year. Like if you're into comedy at all, and I don't watch a lot of comedy documentaries, but I'm really fascinated with that whole life and everything.
That's crazy you mentioned this because I want to see it. What's it called?
It's called The Comedy Store.
Comedy Store. So about more than 15 years ago now, probably 16, 17 years ago, I moved to LA from Houston. I'm from Texas. And to work on a documentary, and it was about comedians, and it was at the Comedy Store. It never got released, the documentary, but I was at the Comedy Store maybe three times a week, and I was in. But we shot everything in the belly room.
Yeah, they talk about
the belly room.
They do. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was up in the belly room shooting all these. Let's just call it. It was a very unique personalities who maybe wander the streets of Hollywood who are trying to make it in comedy and show business. Mm-hmm. And it was about them trying to become comics. I'll send you a link. But so I spent lots of my early time in LA at the Comedy Store. And this is pre-MMA, before I knew anything about MMA. So I have seen lots of weirdness at the Comedy Store.
They go through all that. It like pulls no punches at all. Like it is, and they do interviews with like everyone.
Who's the lady that ran the place? She recently passed away.
Mitzi Shore. Mitzi Shore. She's the focus of it, obviously. But it's, you should really see that. It's again, they do an episode of Joe Rogan. Folks on Joe Rogan coming back and. Because he had been banned from the Comedy Store for a while. They go in this whole thing with him and Carlos Mencia, that whole thing that happened years ago that I had completely forgot about. They talked to they must have done at least 75 interviews, I think, with on-camera people. It's really good. I mean, they talked to Louis C.K. They addressed that whole situation. Like, it's excellent. I think based on what you told me, you gotta see it.
Yeah, when I was there, like I saw like Brody Stevens was around a lot, and Ari Shaffir.
Yeah, he's in it too. Yeah.
Yeah, those guys were kind of chugging along, doing their nightly comic stuff, whatever. Yeah, that's wild.
Awesome. What have you seen lately that you've liked?
I spend most of my. I feel like I spend a lot of time catching up on old series.
Yeah.
I know it sounds kind of silly. I just finished watching all of Avatar, The Last Airbender.
Oh, okay.
The Nickelodeon series that Israel Adesanya's nickname is after.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, are you familiar with it?
I've heard of it. I've never seen it.
You know what? It is very good. It came out in the early 2000s, so I was kind of like past college, so I wasn't really watching that much TV, I think I was just out doing things. So I just kind of missed it when it came out, and now it's on Netflix, and it's actually just a well-done martial arts kids cartoon show.
Nice.
But it's actually well-done and funny and good characters, and yeah. So I've been watching that. I've been watching a lot of Schitt's Creek.
I've never seen that before, but I've heard a lot about it. Is it good?
It's hilarious. It's good. It's good before you go to sleep type of comedy. Nothing that's going to stress you out. It's not necessarily super mean comedy. It's just kind of nice, good writing, good acting. It's just there's nothing that blows you away. It's just kind of just good comedy. I don't know how to explain it other than that. It's just like it's almost good family comedy, but about being a family comedy.
Yep. Yep.
Just watch that. Oh man. Just watch The Queen's Gambit. I enjoyed that.
I'm too into that right now. It's really good. It's really well done.
You know what? It pays off. It pays off well.
Yeah.
It's a good show. Just, yeah, like I said, just well acted, well, the production design's great, mm-hmm. and everything. I'm into that kind of stuff. It's like, oh wow, these are great costumes, great lighting, you know?
Yeah.
So maybe things people take for granted, but I'm like, this is awesome.
Yeah.
Speaking
of HBO Max, were you a big moviegoer before all this?
Oh yes, without a doubt. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's been one of the sad things about this year. Obviously, I used to go to movies. I'd say quite a bit. I've probably been to like maybe 10 or 12 movies a year. The last one I saw was Tenet. Three or four months ago, huge IMAX. There was hardly anyone there, so it was good. But so this HBO Max news that came out today is that they are basically their whole slate for 2021 is going to start on HBO Max instead of going to the theaters. Yeah, that's wild. I mean, these are like movies that would make a ton of money. Like obviously, the Wonder Woman announcement came a couple weeks ago. Like the Godzilla King Kong movie, I believe the next Matrix movie, all these different movies they had lined up next year. Like we're gonna push this towards HBO Max first in conjunction with theater releases. I think either some concurrent and I think some a month after that. That is I was talking to some friends about that also go to the movies a lot, and they were just like, oh, what? Holy shit! Like it's crazy. Like that we're at this point now that. You know, and obviously the Max launch was talked about a lot, not being kind of a great launch to start with. But people are like, it's crazy. All these movies, they're just going to be like, no, we're gonna put it on Max first. Wild time we're in.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm happy just on selfish reasons. I'm happy about that, but I am bummed because one of my favorite parts of LA is all the nice theaters they have here. So. I first moved to LA, I loved going to the Cinema Dome. It's a big theater in middle of Hollywood. I love going to there. I just like going to nice theaters and stuff in LA. So I am bummed about that, but I have a nice TV at home too. So
that's cool awesome. For me. That's awesome. Well, before we let you go, I want to give you a chance to plug where people can check you out. Obviously on mafighting.com, but. Tell the people where to follow you on social media for all your hot takes and all that. And then also, yeah, the YouTube channel for MMA Fighting and whatever you want to plug. Go ahead.
My name is Casey Leiden. Feel free to follow me at E-K-C on Twitter. I got that Twitter so long ago when Twitter was just about talking about what your favorite cheese is about, and that's about as deep as it got. So feel free to follow me on Twitter. You can follow me on Instagram, but it's mostly just pictures of me and my dog if you like that. So just Google my name, you'll find it.
Yeah, and also you can, if you're into dogs, mixed martial arts, right
mixed back martial arts, yes,
that's
yes.
Right,
you can just Google it. There's good 6-7 back episodes that we've shot before, and you can find them.
That's right. Yeah.
Our little documentary series following fighters and their dogs.
Yep. Very good. Everyone needs a smile on their face these days, right? Non-serious stuff. Casey, it took me 4 years to finally get you here. All my fault, but I'm glad we finally did. It's been a fun conversation, and thanks so much for stopping by.
Awesome, man. Thanks. Thank you for having me.
All right. Big thanks to Casey Leiden. You can obviously check him out on social media, YouTube, as you mentioned, and let him know if you heard him here or if you're a big fan of his, let him know that you heard him here as well. I know some people had requested him a long time ago. Hopefully those people are still fans of the show and are listening. And I appreciate you hitting him up and letting him know if you enjoy the conversation and all that good stuff. That's always appreciated. Getting a couple things that are on the top of my mind before we go. So Impact Wrestling, obviously this whole angle with, we assume it's going to be an angle with All Elite Wrestling coming out of the Kenny Omega win on Wednesday night. I think, Dave Meltzer and Brian, when they did the Wrestling Observer Radio after a show, they kind of summed up some of my feelings, or Dave did, when he's kind of talking about some of the questions that people have, and to kind of paraphrase, like, Impact has a lot more to gain out of this than AEW does. So Kenny's trying to, Kenny Omega, is looking to help his friend, we assume, in being Don Callis, and help his company out. But what? How does this really help AEW? And I say that because Impact has had such a stink on it. It's such a stain. And Scott D'Amore has talked about this since taking over a year ago or whatever it was. And he was on a conference call earlier this year and kind of discussed this. And, you know, they're really having to overcome the Russo era, the Dixie era, just the fact that they were kind of just this weird, like, laughingstock of the industry in a lot of ways, which had talent. And it's crazy. Like, you go watch some of these clips and you look at the roster. I mean, they had some of the stars that are big time stars in AEW and WWE and even NXT today. I mean, they had a lot of these talented wrestlers on the roster and they couldn't make it work. I mean, they had, if you're obviously a New Japan fan, they had Okada and they used him in this comedy role. And then he went on to become one of the best wrestlers in the world, if not the best. And, almost a no doubt Hall of Famer. And it's crazy. I mean, they had the Young Bucks, they had AJ Styles, Samoa Joe. I mean, they had like everyone you could ever imagine and they still blew it. And so they've had to overcome this laughingstock thing. And it's hard. I mean, it is for me, you know, I write up some of the recaps, how we kind of arrange stuff. I do like the next week in Impact and check out some stuff. And, you know, even now in the pandemic, you kind of have to give them a little bit of a pass because everyone's struggling with money in a lot of ways. But some of the stuff just looks kind of low rent, kind of cheap. They're doing this Who Shot Johnny Bravo thing, which is kind of a comedy thing, but it's hard. They still attract talent and they still apparently have some money because they're able to sign some folks. But so this is going to be a big opportunity for them. I don't know. I think so many people were like all in saying this is going to be kind of like an invasion type angle. That's what everyone likes to go to, is a default promotion versus promotion war, whatever you want to call it. And Tony Khan's a smart guy, hashtag co-opted. And he knows what's going on. He knows the deal. And according to Dave, Dave's not really sure kind of what's going on with this. We just know it's going to be some sort of interaction, but it's unclear what. And you think Tony Khan is smart enough to know kind of where Impact stands in terms of most pro wrestling fans' attention span on the spectrum, wherever you want to call it. Like, do people even care about it? They're also on a network that hardly, not a lot of people get in Access TV. There's a reality there. And obviously some people can see it on Twitch, but again, you're talking about the masses that you're trying to attract. So I'm curious how this is going to play out. I'm trying to be optimistic, but I'm very skeptical based on the past. If you watch some of the Impact proc now, which I have, the empty arena, they don't tend to do that well. I mean, the ring, I noticed, and this has been a complaint from others, I guess, it's very noisy. It just, the backstage stuff, the quality isn't there, the videos, I don't know. There's something that feels still low rent about it, but this is their big chance. And if this is an interpromotional versus interpromotional thing, I don't really know what AEW gets out of it. I mean, outside like a Young Bucks Good Brothers match, which people seem to want. I mean, there's talent there, but are people clamoring to see like Omega versus Rich Swann? But if he's going over there, why would that? So it's like the motivations. There's so many different questions for this. And again, AEW after Wednesday seemed to be in a nice spot, and I don't know. I'm skeptical about how this is going to go. I'll remain open-minded. We'll find out more on Tuesday when Kenny Omega appears on Impact. But yeah, it's, I don't know. Every time I keep thinking they have the talent to overcome this, it's hard to ignore the past, and probably a lot of you are thinking the same thing. Yoel Romero, I wanted to get this real quick. So this was happened on Friday night. So Yoel Romero, former UFC middleweight championship contender, there's an asterisk with that. We'll get to that. This is, he was released last night. He had three fights left in the schedule. This is, I haven't read a lot about this today to see if more information has come about it. His management saying that they seemed surprised, but maybe I think that could have been like, they could have been surprised in how it turned out. What he was asking for is a question. I mean, he had three fights going on his contract. So you look at this. So Yoel Romero, entertaining fighter with basically, 40 plus events a year, someone you could easily headline a fight night with, someone you could put, third from the top in a pay-per-view, even co-main event, depending on position. He is coming off a run in which he's had four title opportunities, two of which he was actually able to kind of go through with, unsuccessful in both. The other two times he missed weight. So he's kind of in this weird position where he's at the top of the food chain in that division, and he doesn't seem to have enough to beat the champion. That Adesanya fight was terrible, no matter what anyone tries to say. It was terrible, boring, whatever. So he's at the top of the food chain. So if he starts picking off guys underneath him and he's there, I mean, is there a clamoring for him to get another title shot when he's had these opportunities already? So there's that question about it. However, he's an interesting character. It's strange. You know, there's this conspiracy theory out there that basically UFC is really trying to bring in contender series guys because they're cheaper and get rid of some of these higher paid veterans off the roster to make them more money. It sounds conspiratorial, but there's some, I'm curious about that. You know, you can't really, you know, you're not going to highlight or main event a UFC event, UFC Plus event, with people from the contender series. I think there at some point, even the quality has to still be there. But I'm interested to see. I assume, you know, Romero will probably do an interview with Helwani in a couple of weeks, if not on Monday. We'll kind of see what happens with that. But, you know, this is a guy that is a looks, has the pro wrestler look, you know, it has fun fights, controversial fights. Someone you would think is very worth having around. So I know Ryan Frederick had mentioned, who does obviously some recaps for us, and had mentioned on Twitter, and I haven't seen this anywhere else, that, you know, he had asked for his release. So if that was true, what is, you know, what was the impetus for asking for that? What was he looking for that he wasn't seeing? Did they want him to move to 205? That's what I was really hoping for, because, you know, 205 would be another fun contender in that mix. So I'm kind of fascinated to see how this turns out, but I was very surprised. Again, with Dana White and Casey and I talked about this, you know, Dana White saying this is a hugely successful year for them financially, even without fans, you know, they shouldn't be looking to cut money. They should be looking to kind of reinvest. My hope is reinvest in fighters, and this goes back to the fighter union thing and all that. But, you know, releasing Yoel Romero, there seems like there's something else's story there. It doesn't really make sense. But on the competitive side of it, if you look at it, you know, to me, the logical fight would be a rematch with Paulo Costa, because that fight was so close. It was so fun. You could do a 5-round of that easy on ESPN proper and draw a nice number with it and get the value out of both guys, especially where they're at in this point in their career. But apparently that's not to be. So we'll see where he goes next. If it's going to be a, you know, freak show promotion, if it's going to be like a Ryzen or something like that, or if it's going to be a Bellator, we'll have to see. But I'm really interested to see what the story was behind that, because I think it'll kind of tell us a lot about what's to come. And just kind of keep that whole contender series conspiracy theory in the back of your mind and kind of see how it plays out. Paul and I do our year in review shows. We go over, you know, who is released and so on. So we'll kind of see some of the names and see how they trend, and maybe there is some truth to that. Who knows? Conspiracies, right? Seems to be the era for them. So we will call it good there. Thanks to all you guys for listening. You have a lot of choice in your podcast today. Greatly appreciate the time you spent with me or any of our podcast hosts here on WrestlingObserver.com. Thanks, Casey Lydon. Thanks to Yoel Romero for being him. Thanks to AEW and Impact Wrestling for giving us something to be interested in Tuesday night. We'll see how it turns out. And that's a wrap. Until next time, insert catchphrase here.